of life being tenuously balanced. We'll hear that a lot, both in Maimonides' commentaries of the New Year, but elsewhere in the Machzor itself, that good and wickedness are always in tension within the human spirit, that unlike our Catholic and other Christian neighbors, there's no sense of an inherent flaw in the human spirit, but like the symbol for yin and yang, we are finely balanced and tuned, and the spirit, the moral impulse, is what helps us challenge between our id and our superego, so to speak. And there is, I think, a fulcrum of all of the curses, which I recall correctly is chapter 48, verse 47 and 48. Verses 28, which is to say, because you did not serve God in joy and gladness, parenthetically, when you had the chance, what will become of you is to serve God in misery, to serve others, to be immiserated. So, of course, our sages react to that much in the same way they react to commandments in Leviticus to celebrate Sukkot with joy, or to love God with joy elsewhere, that it seems unfair, to say the least, to command an emotional state. You know, you can't tell a child, be happy, stop crying. It's not really the way emotions function. And it seems likewise unfair from a religious and moral and ethical system to insist that your rapprochement, your rapport with God, is based on your ability to smile. I think some of us experience this at holidays like Simchat Torah and Purim. This idea that we should come to shul and be gay and festive when we may have had a fight with a spouse, when we may have received a bad grade in a course, when we may have gotten a demotion or a dressing down from a superior at work. It's just not something one can conjure forth. Although, on the other hand, you can fake it till you make it. There is some scientific study that if you hold a pen between your teeth, the physiological act of smiling can eventually translate into improved feeling. No, it's a real phenomenon. It's true. Holding it in your lips, making this face, relative to holding it in your teeth, which makes effectively a smile, yields different results. Not statistically strong, but statistically significant. So sages, if I recall correctly, like Rashi and Ibn Ezra, I don't know if they're being polemical or a little bit facetious, say that this is the only mitzvah in the parsha. We keep hinting at the things, the conditions for blessing and curse, but those sages of the medieval period roughly say that the mitzvah, the thing that this all rests upon, is your ability to be happy. It's tough. We're going to get to what I think they're really saying. They're not talking about going to a party, having a drink, laughing with friends, being gay or frivolous. They're talking about something else. We'll get to that in a moment. But I really am every year struck by that pair of verses, the idea that if you are not serving God in joy, you will wind up being immiserated. At least to see that as allegory. You know, Josh Gettinger and I talk every year when he's here for this parsha and the other parsha of curses, whether these are metaphor or literal, and he sees them as a parable, among other things, for climate change and the ways in which we can despoil the world itself. I'm more wont to see most of Scripture as metaphoric and allegorical and teaching us something about a more profound truth than the words themselves. But there is a really lovely midrash that suggests that you had the choice to build and repair roads so that pilgrims could get to Jerusalem, and now you're going to become slaves and serfs to repair Roman roads so that pagans can get to their sacrifices. You had the choice to serve God, and now you will be immiserated to serve foreign oppressors. You had the choice to contribute tithes for a sacred service, and now you will be forced to pay duties to foreign overlords as their lieges. I think, this is a conversation I had briefly years ago with Leon Hasden, joy is in so many ways a choice. I mean, we know, I can't offer immediate examples, but we know of people who celebrated God with awe and joy during the Shoah. And we know of wealthy people who seem quite miserable and insecure. This is all possible. They don't station in life and objective quality of life don't correspond to lived experience, or else we wouldn't get continual reports that the Philippines is the happiest country in the world, whatever that means. But I think, as the Dalai Lama wrote about 20 years, and as David Brooks is writing now, he wrote a book in the sect called The Second Mountain, which I'll be teaching about on Yom Kippur, they're not talking about being happy in the sense that we might comprehend it. They're not talking about seeing a movie, reading a comic book, having a drink, going out to a party, going to see a stand-up comic. Although all those things are wonderful. They're talking about that something that by the Talmud is called simcha shel mitzvah, the joy of right action. One might call it the joy of mitzvah, the joy of doing the right thing, of living a holy, sacred, and righteous life. And righteous almost, I mean that in the sense of going on the right path. And Maimonides kind of homes in on this point in his Law Code, saying that I think the words he uses are frivolity is not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is service. The mitzvah is being a part of something greater than yourself, of subsuming your identity into the identity of the world and into the demands that God would place on us, the lure that God wishes us to grasp to become better people. And he says elsewhere in his Law Code that were you to celebrate the holidays, the special events and seasons of Jewish life by having a nice brisket, drinking too much wine, singing a few songs on your at your table, that's not the joy of doing a mitzvah, that's the joy of the stomach. And so to return, I think the Dalai Lama used the words opposite to the way I would. He talked about joy being that frivolous joy, that ephemeral joy, and happiness being the deeper sense. But I think even if you connect it to the great perfume joy, does anyone remember the perfume joy? One of the all-time best perfumes. So beautifully named, because it's about something almost profound. The smell is so simple and floral and reminiscent of all the greatness of life to me. I think joy is the better word personally, a better translation of simcha, which is not about dancing at a bar mitzvah, but about supporting the bar mitzvah boy or the bat mitzvah girl. It's about living a life in community where such things exist, living a life where we support the pure, the poor, and the vulnerable, living a life of striving to be better. That's what really matters to people. You may, at the end of your life, you may, on Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur, look back on a party you went to. But what gives life its significance and its depth is the embeddedness of a life in deeper causes. So I think if we hearken back to that metaphor, that imagery of the two mountains, and half the tribes on one and half the tribes on the other, each sort of shouting and echoing their blessings and curses across the valley, there's always that tension. How are you going to come? How are you going to look at life? What are you going to strive toward? How are you going to orient yourself, your eyes, your heart, your focus towards the good? And my little catchphrase is often, good things are coming to me. Which is simple, a simple mantra that in no way invalidates the fact that suffering happens. In no way invalidates the fact that there is illness and dogs get run over and people suffer and die inexplicably. Young people can die in their sleep, God forbid. But it orients us to the fact that every day something good can and usually does happen. Coffee, listening to the birds, seeing last night some bats fluttering as I walked home from temple. Little and large episodes of goodness can happen at every moment, have happened in your past year, and God willing will happen in 5780. In no way invalidating or erasing the challenges that are sure to come just as surely, but orienting us towards the mount of blessing and goodness, and orienting us to seize the opportunity to serve God in joy rather than allowing our lives to be immiserated for yet another year. So I hope as we move in the next few days and you prepare your last weeks towards Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, my blessing to all of you is that this year be oriented towards goodness, joy, and delight, the delight of right action.